Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
All right, Senator, it's a pleasure to have you here this morning. How are you?
I am well. Great to be with you, as always.
Yes, we always look forward to it. Let's get right to it. In the day ahead, we know Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire is going to testify in front of Congress. What can we expect to come out of all of this?
It will be a pivotal moment in the impeachment investigation because Admiral McGuire, who, by the way, was a Navy SEAL before joining the intelligence community, is a career professional, and hopefully he will tell the truth about the whistleblower complaint regarding President Trump's contacts with Ukraine and the threats that he made to them to withdraw aid if they did not help him in his political campaign. That kind of threat, and I've reviewed the phone conversation, smacks of a shakedown, and Admiral McGuire has to provide detailed testimony about that conversation, but also about the whistleblower complaint, which has not been publicly released, but has been provided in a classified setting to various senators, and about other witnesses who may have knowledge about this potentially impeachable offense. The act of shaking down a foreign leader, and it comes across very much as a mob-type threat, if you review the conversation, is potentially an impeachable offense, and Admiral McGuire has to testify completely and truthfully about it.
Senator, I do want to point out two things. One thing that you did kind of touch on there, this was a memo, so this isn't the exact transcript of what actually happened over the phone. So those are some missing links to it. And like you said, maybe that will be addressed in the day ahead. But also, does it matter at all that Ukraine's president got on and said publicly that he never felt pressure and he thought the conversation was perfectly fine? He didn't see any pressure whatsoever from President Trump. Does that matter at all?
Well, it matters, but not really materially. You know, I was a federal prosecutor and a state attorney general, and I've seen a lot of conversations where the victim felt that he or she had to testify to exonerate the boss, so to speak. And the fact of the matter is that the president of Ukraine complained to various senators and officials about the holdup in aid that was occurring. Remember, the president held up that military aid, and I authorized it, voted to do so, as a member of the Armed Services Committee repeatedly. The president held it up without any real reason until after that conversation. So you're right about the gaps in the conversation. It's not a transcript. It is a summary, but it seems to quote both sides. And your point also leads to the real need for additional evidence. And that's why the whistleblower complaint about other conversations and other witnesses is so very important. There do have to be corroborating witnesses who know about what was going on behind the scenes with the president and how he was, in effect, according to the allegations, at least, extorting the president of Ukraine.
We're speaking with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. He's with us every week at this time. Senator, Juul CEO Kevin Burns, he's stepping down as the company faces a growing backlash for its part in the vaping epidemic. Your thoughts on this?
Vaping has become an epidemic, and it's largely the result of Juul pitching its products to adolescents and teenagers using flavors and a purposeful strategy of appealing to young people. So they're trying to, in effect, provide a new face, but they're using the same playbook, and it's Big Tobacco's playbook. One reason that they're using Big Tobacco's playbook is that it worked for Big Tobacco. I sued the tobacco companies to stop them from using the pitches to kids with Joe Camel and flavors there. But they need to stop using flavors as well as take these products off shelves where they can be reached by kids, and the FDA needs to do more. So a new face at the top of the organization doesn't change the practices that have led to this epidemic, and they are owned about 30% by one of the biggest tobacco companies in the world, so that's another sign that their tactics are not changing.
Senator, we thank you so much for taking a few minutes this morning. We know you're very busy. Hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you then.
Thanks. All right. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right. And with us here this morning is Luke Frey from the Better Business Bureau. He comes in a couple of times a month, and he wants you to watch out for things. He doesn't want you to get ripped off. How are you, Luke?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing okay.
Yeah. So, Luke, I love this topic today because I have to be honest. I went to church a couple weeks ago. Well, I go every week. But a couple weeks ago, our pastor brought up donating to the church and things like that. And the first thing he did was he picked up what looked like a credit card and he started cutting up credit cards on the stage. And I thought to myself, okay, absolutely. I know as an adult, I am always so worrisome when I go into stores and they think, do you want to open up a credit card? You could save 10% today on your purchase. And I think, no. Because I'm going to get into trouble. But I always think about those parents. When you first hand your teenager a credit card, that is such a challenge. It is just such a transitional time. How can parents make sure that their teen is managing money correctly?
Sure. So I always tell people you need to talk to your teen about it. So you can tell them a couple tips and say, hey, don't overspend, you know, da-da-da, here's what it means. But there's a lot more to it than just that. A lot of adults can't even wrap their head around credit, what a credit score is, how it's compiled, and what that means really for your financial history and future. So it's always good to talk to them, A, about not overspending. So a credit card shouldn't be treated as a loan per se. It will have interest on it, and also teach them how to pay their bill in a smart way. So if you can, always pay off that balance each month. And if you have to keep some on it, that's not going to kill your credit. However, you shouldn't go and max out a card and then make small, say, $100 payments for 8 years, which is probably what it will take you to pay off a whole balance.
You know, this to me is, I know times have changed. I get it. But this is kind of foreign to me because when I was growing up, when I was 17, 18, 19, my father and mother would never give me a credit card. They,
right.
they would never do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, my father would say, do you need any money? You know, yeah, Dad, and he'd throw you a couple of 20s or whatever it was. But to give you a credit card, that this is all new. You know, I've got two sons. One is very, very responsible. Very responsible. The other one, he's getting there. He's
you know, he's a work in progress.
Yeah, he's a work, but he's got his own home now, and he's realizing, hey, this is no joke. You know, but the big thing that my wife and I always try to instill on him: if you're going to use your credit card, make sure that you pay it off every month. If you start paying $10 at a time, boy, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You'll be in a hole that you can never dig out of.
Yeah, it is tricky, and I'm glad you brought up a couple points there. So I don't even know if parents hand their kids cash anymore. So we live in an age of Venmo. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
It's an app where parents, friends, if you go out to eat and one person pays, you just Venmo each other. So a lot of parents are actually choosing that as a way to sort of give their children, you know, $20 here, $20 there, and apps like Venmo also have cards now. So that could be a great option to sort of teach your child how to spend their allowance wisely, or if you give them $100 per se for a whole month, see how they use it. See if they are mature enough, like you said, you know your children, so you know what each of them can handle.
And I think that you also bring up another point, actually, in the release that I saw. It actually brings back, honestly, memories to me, Luke, when I was in college. And when my parents sent us off to college, we got a debit card. Now, a debit card is great because it's kind of another way to track your money, but you're not really paying off, you know, any debt or anything like that. Because once you're in the red, you're in the red kind of thing. But what I do think kind of got lost for a while, I didn't actually get a credit card. I didn't open my own credit card until I was 25, 26 years old, which is still fine. But I think sometimes there's that misconception that I gave my kids a debit card, they're going to start being able to get credit. Well, no, you're not. You actually need to start paying off credit. But I don't think a debit card does that, right?
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that up. So a debit card, obviously, you can only spend as much as is in your bank account, basically. You don't want to go over your debit account. You'll get charges from your bank for overdrawing. You do not earn credit or any type of credit history from having a debit card. You do have to have a credit card. So the reason a lot of people choose to have their teens open up a credit card around 18 is it sometimes makes it easier to be signing on to loans if you're trying to go to school. If your child is trying to lease or buy a car in the next few years, all it does is really start, hopefully, creating a healthy credit history so that, again, buying cars or doing those things that require some sort of credit background will be easier, and they may not need a cosigner, i.e. you, the parent, to be on those things.
Yeah, I know we noticed that with just getting a mortgage for our home. Like I said, I'm 29 now, but not having a credit card for many years, you know, it actually took a combined, I needed to use my husband as well, his credit, in order for us to get a good mortgage, to get a good home. And so it really does make a very big difference. Does it matter the age that you start? I mean, when you say teenager, I got to be honest, immediately I think a sophomore in high school. I'm not thinking an 18 or 19 year old. I'm thinking a high schooler. But I would think high school is still kind of an inappropriate age to give a credit card, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm still in the age where you shouldn't get a cell phone till you're in high school, so I'm kind of an old relic. But when would you suggest parents start to do the credit card talks?
I mean, it's totally up to you and your child. Like Tony was saying, you know your children best. So if your child is in high school and you're like, yeah, I don't think so, not yet, then it's not the right time. However, for apps like Venmo, I think you do have to be 18, so you will have to check. I believe in order to have a credit card, you do have to be 18. But an option is, if you have a credit card, sometimes you can add a card to your account.
Well, that's a good idea.
So if you have a credit card, you can actually add a card onto your account under your child's name. Again, you'd have to check with your bank on the age requirements. However, that could also be a great way to help monitor and teach them how to use a credit card, or say, hey, it's only for emergencies. Here it is. I'm going to see everything you buy on it.
Well, you know, and it's also important, too, to monitor their credit card action. You know, you've got to take a look at what's going on. You've got to look at and sit down with them and say, well, what's this expense?
Hated those conversations.
Well, it is.
No, but it's true. My mom would sit me down in college. So where did we go for $120-something dollars
that's
now out of me and Dad's pocket? And I was like, oh, God.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's totally up to you as a parent, too. So I had a credit card, I believe, probably late high school, since I made a lot of online purchases, and you really shouldn't use a debit card online. So it's a lot safer, and if you're buying gas, too, if your child has a car in high school, they're 18, you should probably use a credit card at the gas pump, too. So I had one since high school, and my parents didn't monitor that. Was that a good thing? Was that a bad thing? I don't know. However, again, you know your child best.
Luke, we've run out of time, but it's always interesting stuff. If people want more information on this subject or others, what can they do?
Sure. They can always go to bbb.org and scroll down to our news section.
All right. Sounds good. Luke, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
All right. Thank you. Sounds good.
Big story this morning. President Trump President Trump. They have started what they call an impeachment inquiry. And, well, if this goes through, this would be history-making, absolutely history-making. Now, whether you like the president or not, we are going to see history in the making if this goes through, okay? That prompts the question of the day. What piece of American history in your lifetime sticks out in your mind, okay? It's funny, you know, you talk about, we were talking about this this morning, you talk about this in whole impeachment thing with President Trump. That's the way it started with President Nixon. It was getting to that point where he was really sweating it out, and he just decided, hey, the heck with it, I'm going to resign. And that's the one piece of American history for me that I was a part of. I lived through that, like a lot of people, but I remember him being on TV that night and telling the world that he was going to resign as president of the United States. That was unbelievable. That had never happened before in the history of our country. And he turned around and said, more or less, yeah, I'm guilty. I've got to walk away. And I remember sitting there in our living room. It was they broke through on all programming, and this was the story of the day. I remember sitting there with my family, and I remember my mother bursting out in tears, you know, crying, and my dad having that blank stare on his face like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at both of them. I didn't quite understand what was going on, but I knew it was bad. And I was like, what does this mean? What does this mean? You know, and then years later, it hit me. I was like, wow, you know, you were part of American history. You mm-hmm. actually lived through that, you know, and that's just one thing that sticks out in my mind, if you're asking me.
Yeah, I know when we were walking out of the studios yesterday, as we mentioned earlier in the newscast, Lisa Wexler got her hands on the actual transcript, the memo that went out from the White House, and that was breaking news during her show, and she was reading it live, I think around 10:30 in her show. And of course, when we're off the air, we're still listening to WICC, we're listening to our colleagues and everything, and we're listening to this, and Tony and I walked out of the building, and Tony said, oh my God, whether you like him or not, we may see an impeachment. And I said, yeah, I mean, that document certainly doesn't make it look good, that's for sure. And immediately we were talking about, you know, what kind of stood out to us. And of course, you know, very similar actually to your story, Tony, I was 8 when Bill Clinton got impeached. And I remember having absolutely no clue what any of this means. And I know it sounds so foolish, but again, an 8-year-old, you're talking about elementary school. I just remember hearing that word come up over and over on TV. And of course, my parents were really into it. My grandparents were very into it as well. And they kept saying that word. And all I kept thinking was, if he hates peaches so much, just give the man an apple. Like, I just couldn't make sense of it. And then eventually, as I got older, same kind of realization. Wow. That really happened. It was wild. And you know, of course, I wasn't around when Nixon happened, but you've seen enough documentaries on it and everything. And it really is unbelievable, really, how the whole thing plays out. And I just thought today, you know, I think enough of our shows, ours, Lisa's show, Paul's show, is going to focus, obviously, on what is at hand, what's going on in Washington, what's happening in the day ahead. So I just thought we obviously can't not address that this is going on in our newscasts. But as far as our question of the day, I just think it's very interesting. We have so many listeners that run the gamut for ages. I have people that are my age, and then it goes all the way up to, you know, my grandparents' age. And I think it's really neat to hear sort of what people have gone through or what they really remember standing out. Of course, 9/11 sticks out to me every time you think immediate American history. But, you know, I would love to hear what kind of stands out to people and have them share those experiences or what their thoughts were. I think that's always interesting, too, especially if you were young. What were your thoughts when that was initially going on, if something huge was going on in either your classroom or at home, and we could share some of those stories on the air. I just thought it'd be a cool opportunity to do that.
I'd like to hear from somebody who, if they're still around, I'd like to hear from somebody who actually heard Franklin Delano Roosevelt on the radio that day when they said, a day that will live in infamy. I mean, who during World War too. I mean, that person, if you're out there, they were probably very, very young, but definitely very, very young when they heard it, and they're probably close to 90 or 100 years old now. But I'd like to hear from somebody who actually was there when that was going on.
Yeah, that's wild.
You know, what was going on in their mind when Franklin Delano Roosevelt made that great quote some 80 years ago or whatever it was. But anyway, that's our question of the day. Go to Facebook and see what it's all about. All right, we were talking some of the morning anyway about this impeachment inquiry and exactly what is going on with President Trump, and will this lead to his impeachment? And it, like I said, as an American, whether you like Donald Trump or not, you don't want this smudge on our record, if you will.
I think it's a huge piece of American history, that's for sure.
Yeah, oh, sure, absolutely. And that prompted our question of the day. What are some of the big things that happened in history, that happened in your lifetime, that stick with you? Now for me, there are several things. Of course, like Melissa mentioned earlier in the morning, the 9/11 attacks, that's a big one. But there are other things that, I don't want to say get swept under the rug, but there are other things that maybe not so much as prominent as 9/11. And I was thinking the day that President Nixon decided that he was going to resign, the pressure got too much and he was out of there. It wasn't too long before that Spiro Agnew had resigned.
Yep.
And then Gerald Ford became vice president. Then Gerald Ford became the president. And it was a really turbulent time in our history. It really, really was.
Yeah, no, and that's just it. I think there are some huge moments that sometimes get sort of swept under, like you mentioned. I know for myself, I feel like there are certain moments just even in sports history that kind of stick with me. I mean, it sounds like it's very recent, but I know when Derek Jeter retired, it was a huge deal. It was something that just kind of shakes you to the core, and you think, this is something, I've been watching this team since I was 5 years old, and when I remember when Derek Jeter came onto the team, I remember it was him, it was Pettit, Posada. It was a big deal, and it was just crazy in that moment. Not that he was leaving, but that, holy moly, how has 20 years already gone by and now all of a sudden he's done? You know what I mean? And it's moments like that that also kind of stand out. So it was interesting to hear from people on Facebook, because it wasn't just these huge things that stood out, but where they were and what they were doing and how they interpreted it. I thought that was kind of cool as well.
All right. Okay, let's read some of these. Richard writes in, the first landing on the moon. As a kid, I was mesmerized by the whole event and still have a booklet with a bunch of photos from takeoff to landing. It's funny how those things, when you were a kid, how it sticks with you when you get to be 50, 60 years old. It's funny, you know?
A question for you, Tony. I meant to ask this, because when Richard wrote that, it immediately made me think for a second. When the millennium was coming, or when, I guess, when 2000 was coming, did you have those fears? Remember, they thought the whole world was going to end as soon as midnight struck and it turned 2000. Did you hear about any of that stuff?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah, I thought that. So I only heard it from my grandmother, who just was so panicked about it, and she loved snow globes, and she gave me a snow globe, which I still have, and it has a computer with all these things coming out of it, like it's exploding, and it said, welcome, 2000 or whatever, or like goodbye, whatever. I still have that snow globe because so many people believed that the whole world was going to end the day it turned 2000, and I still have that. So when I read about the booklets, I thought, it's funny how you hold on to those things. I thought, what a stupid thing, but now how funny it is, especially since my grandmother has passed since, but it's just funny.
Yeah, it's funny. But you'd be surprised. A lot of people thought that back then, whatever that was, 18, 19 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. It's just interesting. Mike Sullivan says, the Challenger explosion. We talked about that over breakfast this morning. He was 6 years old when it happened. He was home from school watching The Price is Right with his mom when it happened. Wow.
Yeah, I was working in radio in the afternoons. But in the mornings, I would open up this gas station for my friend. I would get it all together, and I would pump gas for the first 5 or 6 hours of the morning. And we were all hanging around, and it was a bright, clear day. It was a beautiful day. We were all hanging around, and a bunch of guys that worked there, they were all crazy. We were on a break, and we were eating donuts, drinking coffee, and the mailman came in. And we were like, hey, Joe, what's going on? And he said, didn't you guys hear? Hear what? The Challenger exploded. And we were like, what?
That's insane.
You're kidding me. And he was like, yeah. And it's funny how you think, because the first thing, I don't know if it was out of my mouth or out of somebody else's mouth, first thing you think without thinking, were there any survivors?
Of course.
Is everybody, you know, did they all die? And he was like, oh, yeah, and it exploded right there in the air. And we had an old TV that had the rabbit ears and it was all, you know, filthy dirty. And we got it, we plugged it in, and we tried to, and we got a little bit of it. And they kept showing that little piece of film over and over and
wow.
over again. And it was, it's one thing to read about it in the history books. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to be alive.
Right.
And it's happening right in your lifetime, you know?
I agree. No, sure. And it's interesting. I know a couple of these other ones I know you have talked about before. Scott said the day President Kennedy was shot, that came up a lot. A lot of people mentioned that. But he had he remembered back. He was four. He turned four the day that happened. His mother, who is still alive at 93, God bless her, he said, I was in Stratford Town Fair getting things for my birthday party that night. The announcement came over the loudspeaker that the president had been shot. I can't even imagine that. He said, my mother began taking stuff out of the shopping cart, putting it back on the shelf. I asked her why. She told me we were not going to have the party that night. We left the store, went home. One of my earliest childhood memories. Can you imagine?
That was the big difference,
wow.
though, in those days. The president was murdered, and the country stopped.
Right.
The country completely stopped. Now, here's Scott, as a little kid, and his mother turns around and says, no, the right thing to do is not have a party.
We're
going to go
anything.
Home, and we're going to, whatever they did, they watched it on TV. The country was in mourning.
Of course.
And now I think we lost a little bit of that in this day and
yeah,
age.
Yeah, well, we've seen attempted shootings for the last three presidents. We've seen that there have been attacks on not just President Trump. Obama went through it, and I believe Bush went through it as well after 9/11 happened. So, I mean, we've seen consistently that more attacks on the president, that continues to happen. But how the results would have ended up, I mean, who knows?
All right. Carl says, serving in Vietnam as a medic, I feel I was part of history.
You were.
God bless you, Carl, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you. Lucille brought up the day that Kennedy was shot. Caroline said the Iraq War. Tom also brought up 9/11. And Sarah said Sandy Hook, which, yeah, I mean, how can you forget? Obviously, Sandy Hook, way too fresh in our minds. That also was a big deal, obviously.
Obviously. Yes, sirree. And that's a wound that'll never heal, as far as we are concerned in this area. Distressing story that I'm reading this morning, millennials, which is where Melissa falls in, ages 23 and between 23 and 38. Bad news for you guys, because according to this article, you guys are having a hard, hard time saving for retirement. Okay, adults ages 23 and older with at least $10,000 in investable assets, well, they're really not doing a good job. Why? The number one response was housing. It's killing you guys, you millennials. The housing is really killing you, partly because of rising rental costs. Young people are spending big chunks of their income on housing. Now, that's especially true for families. One in five millennial parents reported spending 50 to 59% of their income on housing, and that's a little distressing. This is the first generation, I think your generation, Melissa, the first generation where experts don't have high expectations that you guys are not going to do as well as your parents or your grandparents did. It was a foregone conclusion that every generation did a little bit better, but nowadays, between what we have to pay for housing and food and everything else, and we're not making that much money, it's really a rough go on the millennials. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, of course, it's going to seem like it's biased because I'm in that age group, but I mean, there are things that people say about millennials that I think is true, and then I think there are things that are completely ridiculous. But I do feel that we have a lot stacked against us. I think in some ways we can't get out of our own way, but I do think in other ways, you know, take for example the question of the day we talked about yesterday in the taxes. Almost, I'd say 80% of our answers were adults who said, why do you think we're getting the heck out of Connecticut? I mean, it's unfortunate. I grew up here. I was born here, raised here. I love Fairfield County. I love my family here. I loved going to school here. Very proud of where I went to school and everything. But it is so expensive, Tony. It's unbelievable. I mean, we were talking about it at breakfast this morning. Norman was saying, you know, I'm so excited for you that you're going to Disney this weekend. And I said, I may not even come back. And he was like, what? Why? And it's like, look, it's, you know, there's a reason why people are moving out of Connecticut. And there's a reason, because here's the problem is you can't survive unless you have a dual income. You just can't. It's not possible. And God forbid if you're not married or you don't have a stable relationship and you are paying on your own. Look, a lot of kids have to move back in with their parents or are moving back in with family or are living with other siblings just so that they can live day to day and they don't have to go paycheck to paycheck. And I'm not saying that past generations didn't go through this, but it is so common now. I can't tell you. I could think off the top of my head, besides my friends who are married with children, which I don't have a lot of those, almost every one of my friends is living with their parents right now, and I don't consider them losers by any means. These are people with college educations. Not only do they have bachelor degrees, some of them went on to get their masters. Some have doctorates. I look at my own sister, who is getting her doctorate in the spring and, you know, is going to be a physical therapist. But right now, she is living at home. I look at my brother-in-law. He is a plumber in training right now. He's living with his parents, and plumbers make great money. My very best friend from college, she's living with her parents because she's a social worker. And even though she makes good money, again, to live on your own, if you're not married and you're not making ends meet, it is almost impossible. And I mean, I'm grateful that I had parents who were very helpful. I didn't walk out with any loans, so thank God for that. But when you add loans from school that we can't afford, you can't afford to live here. It's very expensive and taxes are insane. And there's constantly more and more being built up. And where do you go, Tony? I mean, where can you really go, especially if you love living here? So, I mean, in some ways, yeah, I mean, I think that's completely dead on. I can't really speak for if it's worse off than other generations. I think each generation honestly had their own issues, whether it was money or if it was just, you know, things going on with the economy or whatever the case may be. But I do think there are challenges stacked against us. Absolutely. I absolutely think so.
Well, there was a time where I remember when I was getting ready to move out and do my thing, and I remember, you know, asking for advice from my mother and my father, and my mother would say, well, your week salary, your first week salary of the month, that should take care of your rent or your mortgage. Oh boy, was that 1946
right.
Thinking that yeah. You know, that's over with. It's done. I've got a son. He's well educated. He's brilliant. Can't make any money. He can't make any money. And
right.
He desperately wants to get out of the house. He wants to be on his own. But you know, I told him, don't get yourself into a situation that I'm going to have to bail you out of.